Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to African Conversations with your host, Charles Williams. We are joined today by Dr. Wilbur Smith, author, producer, and humanitarian, award-winning writer and entrepreneur. He is in the studio with us today to share with us the story of Gertis Hardeman, who hid a shocking secret under a wig and beanie for over 80 years. He was subjected to radiation experimentation at the age of 5 by a county hospital in Indiana in 1927. He lived his life with an actual hole in his head. Gertis was one of 10 children all experimented on with radiation that day. Get ready as we venture into the life and story of horrific government-sponsored terror and the triumph of the human spirit. Dr. Wilbur Smith, author of Holding the Head, A Life Revealed, will be back in just a moment. Welcome back. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Wilbur Smith, PhD, is an author and award-winning filmmaker who strives to capture the essence and power of the human spirit. Outgoing and articulate, Dr. Smith holds a Master's of Arts degree in special education and a PhD in business management. Dr. Smith says, and I quote, "I've had an opportunity to do a number of wonderful things in my life, and if I had to pick those that meant the most, they would be the activities that allowed the greatest impact on the lives of young people, the election to my local school board, and my appointment as Director of Child Development Programs by the Governor of California," end quote. Dr. Smith also served as a prestigious member of California's Community Colleges Board of Governors, contributing to the establishment of policy and procedure for the state's more than 100 community colleges. He has also taught in the School of Business at Pasadena Community College, where he educated and inspired others with messages of education and hard work. When not writing, filmmaking, or adding guidance to the lives of others, Wilbur owns and operates an insurance agency in Altadena, California, where he specializes in all lines of insurance. Welcome to African Conversations, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, and I'm very pleased to be here.
Oh, you are so welcome. We really appreciate the work you took in to research Mr. Hardeman's case and to bring to our attention the manner of suffering and heinous crime that was committed against our people in this particular fashion in 1927. I guess we can begin by you just telling us a little bit more about yourself, considering your educational and managerial background, and then when did it become apparent to you that writing and sharing the story of Mr. Verdes Hartman was an inevitable conclusion?
You know, you reach a point in your life where you realize that you were fortunate enough, blessed enough to do everything that you had set out to do. No, well, not everything, but certainly from the perspective of saying that I wanted to get an education, so I was able to get my education. I wanted to begin my work career, and I wanted what's fulfilling for me. And so as time moves on, and believe me, time does move on, decades later, I say to myself, okay, I'm sitting here, and I've accomplished my goals. What about all of those who either were not able to accomplish goals because of the fact that they needed a role model, or maybe someone that could be placed in their lives when they reached that proverbial Y in the road where they had to make a decision as to whether I should do this or whether I'd do the other. Meaning do the right thing versus perhaps not doing the not so right thing. So I had reached this point where I was looking for ways of placing myself in a position where I could have the greatest impact on the greatest number of people, whether that being serving on a school board or whether it be serving at a state level where I was impacting child development programs or things along those lines. So when I had always said, I want to write a book. I want to do a film. And those things are part of my quote-unquote bucket list. And then this man by the name of Verdes Hartman came into my life. And Verdes Hartman, in my opinion, and I still believe this very, very strongly today, Verdes Hartman gave me not only the added courage that I needed, but gave me the subject matter. And I said to myself, this is it. And once I began that journey down this road of telling his story, I was compelled to make sure that I saw it through the end. And right now I'm at a point where I've actually created a film, created a documentary film, an award-winning documentary film, and at the same time finished a book on the same subject matter. With the book, I'd like to add the point that I not only just wanted to write a book, but I wanted to write a book that was easy reading, comfortable reading, where you didn't have to have a dictionary sitting by, and perhaps at the same time having the story so exciting and told in a fashion where you wouldn't want to put the book down. And I think I've been able to accomplish those tasks.
So that's a very impressive work that which you've done. Can you introduce us to Mr. Verdes Hartman, his beginnings, and how he first decided to reveal his secret to you?
Sure. Verdes Hartman was a man who stood next to me in my church choir at a church here in Pasadena, California, just outside of Los Angeles. We stood in the same church choir for about 20 years. He stood next to me, standing about 5'8". I'm standing about 6'3". Obviously, it was very easy for me to sort of look down upon the top of his head. Well, lo and behold, Verdes had a very unique characteristic, and that was that he always wore a wig. And it wasn't just a toupee, it was a wig that was an Elvis Presley-style wig, you know, the type that was tall on the top and very slender on the sides. It had the massive sideburns. And as he aged, meaning now in his 70s, the style of the wig remained basically the same. There was no gray hair in this wig, for instance. And so I befriended him and became very close to him, obviously, during a 20-year time span. And I tried to perhaps even influence the style of this hair wig that he wore. But Verdes was very steadfast in what he wore and his beliefs. So at some point, he ended up sharing with me why he wore that wig, and it led to me actually the development of the story.
That's most fascinating. How humbling it must have been to be made privy to the weight that this man had carried for so many decades. In this documentary trailer, Verdes says that he wanted this story told, and what did he hope would be accomplished by this book and film?
Well, first of all, let me share with you what he was hiding, and then I will share with you what he hoped to accomplish. He came into my office one day, and he was crying. Not only just crying, but he was exhausted, and it was obvious, his exhaustion was obvious, because he was perspiring very heavily. It was a warm summer day in Southern California. I recall the temperature being a little over 100 degrees. Virtus came in, took his horn-rimmed glasses off, put them down on his lap as he's sitting in front of my desk, and as he's crying. And I, by the way, was extremely concerned. I thought that perhaps maybe he was suffering from sunstroke. I thought someone had perhaps violated him. Maybe they had beat him up. Maybe he was robbed. I had no idea what to expect. And so, I must be honest, I was frightened, to say the least. And at that point, he said to me, "I'm tired." And I said, "Tired of what?" He said, "You've always wondered why I wear this wig. I'm sure you've always wondered. You've asked me about it. You've commented on the style of it." He said, "I'm going to tell you a story." And that's when he shared with me that age 5, he was experimented on. He was experimented on with radiation back in a little small town in Indiana. And when he shared that story, I said, "Oh my goodness, something is wrong with Virtus." And I was very concerned to the point where I was really about to dial 911. And at that point, he knew that I was doubting and questioning his credibility. And at that point, he asked me the preoperative question, "Do you want to see?" And I said yes. But I said that even with now more fear in my heart. And at that point, he took that wig off and he showed me the most incredible wound that he had been hiding for so many years. And the man had a hole in his head. And at that point, I started being very, very concerned and very, very interested in just hearing him continue to talk. "Tell me more. How could this happen? How could you be living like this and I not ever know? Why haven't you at least once said to me, 'I have a headache'? Why is it that you always had a smile? Why is it that you never complain, knowing that many of us, when we drive through a fast food restaurant and they don't get our order correctly, we go ballistic. We complain when we break a fingernail. What is it about you that makes you so magical?" And all of these questions, in my mind's eye, needed answers. And it propelled me to the point of saying, I not only must research this, but I must confirm this story, because what he was telling me was the most incredible thing that I had ever witnessed or heard of in my lifetime. So not only then was the incentive planted for me to become a first-time author, but I also had a little camcorder at home, and I knew that I wanted to begin gathering more information. And as I brought it to my office and set it on my little tripod, I began to ask questions that eventually led to 1 minute of film, to 2 minutes of film, eventually becoming a 1 hour and 20 minute feature film that was entered into the International Film Festival and was honored enough to win the Director's Choice Award. At that point, I had to continue my research. I continued discussions with him. I continued interviews with him. I got a plane tickets, plural, and started traveling around the country trying to piece together the elements of this story. And what I found out, I will share with you. And also, you had asked the question about what Mr. Hardiman hoped to accomplish.
Yes,
it took a completely convincing of Mr. Hardiman to allow me the honor of telling his story. Mr. Hardiman was one of the most humbled individuals that you would ever meet. He said to me, as I quote, "Wilbur, no one's interested in my story," end of quote. I said, "Virtus, not only do I hope you're wrong, but it's going to be my mission to prove to you that you are not only wrong, but that people will gravitate to your story and want to know how we could become a little bit of what you were proven to be." And so it has propelled me. It has made me the person, a much better person. It has had me spend time, 6 years out of my life, piecing together one of the most incredible stories I had ever witnessed.
That's amazing. Tell me how the Hardiman family has been affected by the revelations of your book and documentary.
Well, the Hardiman family, first of all, the book and the documentary are available at the website www.holeinthehead.com. I am planning to move the film and the book. And by the way, I have written a high school curriculum centered around this particular story, which is a circle process where individuals can come pull their chairs together. And I have put together a guided curriculum that guides a very, very creative discussion centered around individuals learning from the experience of the film as well as the book. Virtus Hardiman, there were a number of Hardimans that were affected. Maybe I should tell you a little bit more about the story and then show you how the actual Hardiman family links in as the key player. It began in a little town called Lyle Station, Indiana. I would like to encourage and challenge your listeners to Google Lyle's, L-Y-L-E-S, Lyle Station, Indiana. It's a little bitty town that was formed back in 1886, but actually has its roots dating back about 20 to 30 years prior to that.
Okay.
What it was a little town that was formed by Joshua Lyles. Joshua Lyles was the son of a freed slave, and his father, his grandfather, assured that he was half white and half black, but his father wanted to make sure that his sons were never ever taken into slavery, so they moved to Tennessee, and at some point Joshua wanted to come back to Lyle Station, and in doing so, he was very, very wise, and very smart in the way he planned to build this little small black township. So the first thing he realized was that it was a farming town. It was corn, it was wheat, it was barley, and those were the three crops. And when the farmers actually harvested their crops, they loaded those crops onto their wagons and had mules pulling them to market. Well, they lost so much of their crop, and the transportation and roads were grueling. Well, Joshua Lyles, again wanting to build this township, he was forward-thinking and donated actual land to the railroad, and in exchange, he wanted the railroad to build a depot that would stop in Lyles Station and a train depot that would stop, meaning it would now bring visitors as well as they would be able to load their crops onto the rail and move it to market. Very forward thinking. And at the same time, he donated land to the post office and to the postal service, so they built a little postal substation there, and he became the first black postmaster in the country.
Wow.
Lyle Station is also noted because it was one of the stops it was called the Freedom Village, meaning that if you were a runaway slave and you made it to Lyle Station, it was called Freedom Village because then the Underground Railroad, which operated out of Lyle Station, would take you up to Canada. If you made it to Canada, then that was your freedom. Now, mind you, in all of this, I would like to remind your listeners that this story is the most incredible story you'll ever hear about love, about forgiveness, about the stories of a family who endured so much, yet they were able to be so successful, and yet they were able to do things that most of us could not even imagine doing. And it is the message that I'm trying to impart in my work, which says the following. And I will get back to the story, but I think this is an important diversion. It says, you know, we have had things as blacks occur to us. We have endured slavery. We've endured a number of things. But perhaps it's time for us to let go. And never forget, not saying to forget from whence we came and forget our history, but it's time for us to put the blame game aside and decide, listen, it's time to stop asking for the 40 acres and mule, because first of all, no one's going to give it to us. Secondly, no one cares. And those that created the hardship that we endured in the 60s have long since passed. So it's the old adage that when you take, for instance, if I were to use the Jewish community as an example, who have certainly endured some major, major obstacles via the Holocaust and other kinds of wrongdoings, but yet when they are told that they are not allowed on the beach, they don't go and picket, and they don't go and try and figure out a way to boycott. What they decide to do is come together, get around the table, and let's figure out how to buy our own beach. Now,
that's right.
And so that is the mindset that I think that we can learn from the Hardeman family. I gave each one of these individuals every opportunity to even say they were angry about it. I asked them, and they said, no, we're not angry, because if we're angry, that's taking up the necessary energy that we need to figure out how to get past this and to move forward. And if we're angry, that means our heart's not right. And if we're angry, that means our prayers will not be heard. And I said to myself, oh my goodness, as I continue to test and ask the question over and over again, because I'm saying in my mind, I'm asking myself, are these individuals real? How unique to be so well disciplined. And thank goodness I became best friends of one of them. And not only did I have an opportunity to test the hypothesis, but they passed with flying colors every opportunity. Getting back to the experiment, here's right. What happened. In 1927, there was a breakout of scalpel ringworm in a local school called Lyle Station Consolidated School. It was a K-8 school that initially had all races there. But then it was decided that it should be a black-only school because of something that happened. And what the legend has is that tells you is that one of the white kids was stepped out of line, and they were disciplined by a black teacher. And at that point, the white parent felt that the teacher overreacted and perhaps overspanked her child. And so the superintendent, in keeping peace, decided that he would move all of the white children out of this school and leave it just for the black kids. And it ended up being a school where those children outperformed every other school anywhere in the state, even the white schools. And so it's an incredible story of what we can do and what was done by blacks and black children, even when parents could not read or write. And getting back to the scalpel ringworm, the parents of the children who had the ringworm were primarily Hardemans, because Granddad Hardeman owned this land and gave each one of his sons a parcel. Each one of the sons built a home. each one of the homes had a family that eventually had a number of children born. And before you knew it, 15 to 20 of the children in this small school of 55 were Hardimans. Well, they had scalpel ringworm. The superintendent of schools went to the parents and tricked those parents, told the parents that we have a new creative and innovative approach for treating scalpel ringworm, but all it was, the ringworm was a lure to get those parents into the hospital because they wanted to experiment on them to determine what the acceptable level of radiation was. In other words, how much radiation can the human body absorb?
Right, it was a ruse.
Absolutely. So at the time, radiation, the United States was in what was identified as a radiation craze. Radiation was invented around 1897 by a German who was simply experimenting in his lab, had no idea what he was doing, and all of a sudden he looked on the wall and saw the bone structure of his hand after he had passed his hand in front of this incandescent light. And
right.
So there, at that time, there was the world was just at awe because no one had ever seen inside the human body unless they were looking at a cadaver.
Right.
By the way, all of this information is in the book. And so they decided, Roentgen was his name, he was in Germany, he decided that he was going to hook up with Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison was the number one inventor of the time, and what evolved out of that partnership was a portable X-ray machine. Well, the United States was going crazy. They had even developed a radiation drink called radium. And people were drinking this stuff. If you went into a beauty parlor, every woman was subjecting herself to some sort of radiation treatment. Radiation was even used in medicine, where if you were depressed, females, where their ovaries were radiated to help depression. So we were out of control. So this local hospital in Princeton, which was about 4 miles away from Lyle Station, had this radiation equipment that they didn't know how to use. Well, the superintendent of schools had a brother-in-law. His brother-in-law was the head physician at the local hospital. And at that point, they came together to try to trick it, to use these kids, and these kids were the guinea pigs. There were 10 children. The child that was at the end of the line was the hero and person I stood next to in this church choir, Virtus Hardiman. And Virtus received more radiation than any of the other children. And the plan was, I suspect, was that the first child received the least amount of radiation and they continued to increase the dosage. And by the time it got to the last child, Virtus received so much radiation that his skull literally broke apart. And you can look into his head and see the dura matter that covers the brain. And that's how he lived.
Oh, man. That is.
And there were 9 Hardimans, 1 Stewart, 9 boys, 1 girl. The girl was Ella Mae Hardiman. Ella Mae, and in the book I show photos of all 10 of the children. Ella Mae, she wore a wig all her life. Melvin wore a wig all of his life. Virtus Hardiman wore a wig all of his life. And Claude, Lloyd was the youngest victim, but Lloyd was the only one that did not pass away because of some form of cancer. There are 8 of the 10 who are now deceased. There are 2 remaining. One is Gladys Hardiman, who lives in Lyle Station still to this day. And the other is Horace Hardiman, his cousin, who is in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Wow, that's a very amazing narrative. And I want to pick up more about the information regarding how this film has brought to light more of the government's experimentation program that you discovered in your research. We're going to take a break. We're with Dr. Wilbur Smith, author of Holding the Head, A Life Revealed, and we'll be right back after these messages. Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Greetings, I'm Eric Teamer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations, every Tuesday and Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, 3:30 Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
African Knowledge Beyond the Book airs every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a literary society dedicated to the study of African-based psychoanalytical texts. We hope you will join us as we delve into the inner working of our African consciousness. African Knowledge Beyond the Book, every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com.
Join us for the sweetest show on internet radio, Honey Soul Radio, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Join your hostess, the Honey Diva and Miss Lady T, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Honey Soul Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Now add a little honey to your flavor.
According to Henry David Thoreau, a man is rich in proportion to the number of things that he can afford to let alone. With that in mind, we find our people locked in a permanent cycle of poverty, especially those who mistakenly believe that they somehow have arrived, only a paycheck from foreclosure. Although we find black incomes at an all-time high, we still lack wealth, and we also lack the understanding of the purpose of wealth, which is safety, growth, and security. But it's not hard to turn this around. It will first require us to take a look at the bigger picture. And also, it will require us to stop flossing. We have to understand that that $10 that we waste every day equals $300 a month. The same $300 that you find yourself missing every month. The same $300 required for you to invest into your family, into your community, and into your nation. Please join us on Facebook, African Money.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
Listen to Love in Black with Charles and Delavette on the Tribal Family Station on blogtalkradio.com.
There we will share our experiences and our insights on marriage and love, sex, respect, and honor. We're on every Thursday evening on the Tribal Family Station.
Black in public, black out loud, and black on purpose. For some, it's where your deprogramming begins, and it's where others on the path come for fellowship. Come on in and kick your shoes off. Visit us at www.facebook.com/blackinpublic. Put your fist in the air, y'all, because we're going to keep it black.
The Woman's Song Community Experience is an extension of the Woman's Song Facebook community. Woman's Song was created with the mission to promote sisterhood and solidarity amongst women of color the world over. The Community Experience radio broadcast is an outreach effort to bring lecturers, authors, healers, spiritualists, and others with the necessary information to assist us in our campaign to repair ourselves. Our community is in dire need of reformation. During this Renaissance period of awareness, we will honor the womb man, and we seek to bridge the gap of understanding, love, and the upliftment of our sisters in crisis. Will you join us? We need your help in bringing this new awakening to all who desire its enlightenment. Become a part of our commitment to elevation as we work together to lift the divine earth to their rightful places. Woman Song. She's singing.
Dr. Wilbur Smith, author of the book and documentary, Holding the Head, A Life Revealed. Find him on Facebook at facebook.com/holdinthehead. His website is www.holdingthehead.com. And thank you again for being with us, Dr. Smith.
My pleasure. Pleasure being here. I was thinking during the break, I want, if there was anything that we walked away with from our discussion today, it would be hopefully my intention to convey that, you know, this is not a story of something that happened or some story of a medical experimentation. After all, this happened almost 100 years ago. And while we do know and understand that we still have a lot of work to do, it's really my intent and the intent of Virtus Hardiman was to tell the world that it's time for us to love and time for us to forgive and time for us to move on and time for us, perhaps more than anything else, is to realize that we are a better person and the world was a better world when we found that there was a higher being that we reported to and felt knew a little bit more than we know. And so I really am looking and have looked over the years, and I've said to realize that there has not been much that has come along that has really been targeted at showing us that hard work and education really pay off. And this little 85-year-old man who just happens to be black not only has the ability to impart that message, but can really change the world. And that is my dream and my hope from this work. You know, I one little point comes to mind. Think about this. If you were experimented on by a local county hospital, do you think that you would have the courage to go to work for a county hospital and work there for 44 years? And once you left, you received an award for never once missing one day of work in 44 years. Could you walk those halls every single day around radiation, around death, around cancer, and yet look past all of that to the point where you decide instead to inspire others, to be a manager, to be a leader? I interviewed some of his past employees, and they said things to me like, I never thought I had that I could be a secretary one day, because after all, I was a janitor. And by the way, Mr. Hardiman was a janitor most of his life, and he ended up working his way up to head up the entire housekeeping department for the entire county of Los Angeles Medical Center. Now, that's not a small job. But that's a man, that's a job that was held by a man who was experimented on as a young boy, and yet he excelled. And this is what he did every day in his life. And by the way, while he was a janitor, I would like to remind the audience that he also acquired 28 properties and owned 28 different properties that he had tenants in. And when he passed away, he had a net worth of $8 million. And what did he decide to do with that? He willed it to his church, 75% of to his church, and the remaining 25% he willed to the United Negro College Fund, because he never forgot us. He never forgot us and our young people who need an education one day. And he, so he didn't forget his God, and he didn't forget those coming on after him. An incredible man, an incredible story, an incredible, incredible message. And I'm just hoping that as many people will go to the website, holeinthehead.com, and purchase the film, purchase the book. And if they purchased the film and the book, they received a bonus CD of a song that was written, and that song is entitled I Choose to Love, and it's the story of Virtus Hardiman. The combo package goes for $42.90, and you receive all of those elements that I mentioned.
I recommend everyone purchase and support this project. It's a very moving story, and it's a narrative that, you know, exposes this government-sponsored terrorism and victimization of our people. And we need to remember these crimes. We should never forget, and we should move on. As Dr. Smith says, we should acquire our own things so that we don't have to basically be subjected to these offenses by these criminals. I ad-libbed that a little bit. but I'd ask one more question before we conclude. While conducting research for this project, did you discover similar types of heinous Frankenstein government experiments?
No, not at all. I think that in the book, and I'll tell you something that is I believe that is The hardest part about this project is that I am dealing with a man where if most people looked at him at his worst, they would look away. And he said to me, Wilbert, could you imagine living your life knowing that if anyone ever sees who you really are, that they will turn away, they will look away, they will cringe, they will say, oh, and could you imagine living like that, knowing you have to hide every single waking moment of your life? When he asked me that, I turned away. And the reason I turned and looked the other way was because I was crying. It touched me to so instantaneously because I realized, how dare me not exercise my life to the fullest? How dare me complain about the little things that I complain about? And then I said to him, no, I couldn't even imagine it. And from that day forward, I never once looked away from him. I cleaned his wound for him twice a day. And finally, towards the end, I changed his diapers for him. And as I was changing his diapers, I asked the question, who will one day change my diaper for me when the time comes? Because you see, just as we live every single day, death is a part of every ending of that life. So right. We could very easily say that death is a part of living.
That's right.
And then the other side of it is that he said, Wilbert, I've been hiding who I am all of my life. Please don't turn off the camera. Even when you see me in my worst, it's finally my opportunity just to be who I am and to simply take advantage of what you've had and everybody else has had and taken for granted all their lives. But for me, you have no idea how special it'll be just to be able to take off my wig and be who I am. And then finally, he asked me every opportunity I got to ask people, don't look at the bad side of this story, but look at the good side of this story. Look at loving, look at forgiving, look at loving your family, loving your parents, loving your brothers and sisters, living life to the fullest, and never ever allowing somebody else's emergency to become ours. Because the person who did this to me, and I'm quoting Virtus, the person who did this to me is the same person that I go to the altar every day and ask God to bless, to forgive, and to take care of. And he says, you know, I go to the altar every day and ask God for forgiveness of my sins. He says, I must believe that the person who did this to me one day woke up and finally went to that same altar and asked the same God for forgiveness of what they did to me. So how can I not forgive them if God has forgiven them? I mean, incredible memories. I hear them reverberating in my subconscious mind as though he were standing next to me and saying it to me again, over and over again.
That's very compelling. But yeah, I mean, that level of forgiveness is off the scale.
And so that's the reason when I hear people who respond to the story and they say, oh, this individual did this, et cetera, et cetera. Listen, the lady who's the hero in the book, one of the heroes, is a white woman. A white woman who did everything in her power, even risking her own life to try to find a lawyer for those parents of those victims, of those 10 children. And then to find out that her training, her commitment came from her father, who died in the Civil War, fighting in the Union Army, and it was his only reason for enlisting was because he did not agree with slavery, and he ended up giving his life trying to make sure that no other black would be enslaved. And for us to to perhaps show hatred towards one of his grandchildren or great-grandchildren, he would probably be a little disappointed in us, saying that we really don't get it. So yeah, while there are individuals who have done the wrong things, and we will continue to hope one day we'll stop doing the wrong thing, I don't believe that that was the intent of the story, and certainly not what Virtus wanted his legacy to be.
Wow, well, thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Smith, and we hope that everyone listening will go out and purchase the book and the documentary and watch it several times, and especially we will look and we will keep up with your project, especially regarding the curriculum that you are developing, so that in people who are in the state of California, who are in school or whichever this, you know, range is for, they can be able to participate and seek out and encourage their school districts and school boards to acquire this. And we thank you again for sharing your work with us here on African Conversations.
I'm hoping that they'll go to the website www.holeinthehead.com.
And then you can also on Facebook at facebook.com/holeinthehead, one word.
Hole in the head, one word.
Well, we thank you very much again, Dr. Smith, and for appearing on African Conversations.
Thank you.
We thank everyone for coming out to the program today, African Conversations with Dr. Wilbur Smith, and we hope that you all will go out and share this material with all your friends and loved ones. And we'll see you next time here on African Conversations.
Why should we be in such desperate haste and in such desperate enterprises?
All my papers. Do you know what it means to have a revolution? And what it takes to have a solution? Still fighting against oppression. Oh yeah, we're battling our depression.
Poison me. I recognize the beast, fear the mark of the gold heat. Puffing the roll, leafing and busting these police. While y'all players are faking bacon, we cook the whole beat. I put it down plain. I stimulate that left and right brain, baby. Cell by cell and frame by frame. Name, date, soul and material. We big, ethic, rhyme killers like cereal. I burn like venereal. I spit that imperial wizardry. Climb right through the circuitry and choke your team for their cream. That ass as far as we go. Drop this like seagulls and smash a little ego. Got vision like Stevie and Coleco. Giving 2,000 live people one late show with no secret. No equal in the flesh. I've been through more evil than men do. I'm nasty off the head and with the pen.
Yeah, I'm pissed. Easy to rhyme on tracks like this. More things change, the more they remain the same. These games, insidious, playing on the brink of insane. Must be a hockey rink lost up in their drink. In pursuit of playing game, I think, man, they think a revolution be pretty and pink, man. Now in these new tracks, some of these cats don't know how to act. All the criminal acts, they got nothing to do with rap. One head cut behind them backs in black. Quiet riot, Y'all can't hear one hand clap. Revolution is born in what you hear and what you see. The mass reintroduction of society to society. Together we got 100 years of sobriety. These clothes will be flipping like new phones be surprising me. Turned out, they happy just to be in the house. So I'ma call them out, you know I ain't no church mouse. Love out, the revolution rocks on. The revolution rocks on.
Do you know what it means to have a revolution?
Alas, the rap, right is extreme and half of that. Then it's some extremes after that. My rap's nickerish, black like licorice. Well, rap, rappers get it rich, so it's the hood sick, it will deliver it. G, which is the hood sick, it is deliberate. L, I should get it to the side. I'm thinking me and B.E. should have passed it on. Nine, the minute, he gets more love than tennis. On the road to riches, cause revolution's expensive. Finance whips, finance clips, spin our chips in the ghettos, raising rebels with the finance. No champagne, champagne, no ice on my wrist. My bread zipping on feds, sipping on crisp. Out of my mind, Ethiopian wine on my lips. Still ain't dying, the map is mine, the map is mine. Hey!
Do you know what it means to have a revolution? And what it takes to make a solution? Still fighting against oppression. Oh yeah, we're battling all the depression.
Revolution.
Mother Earth is pregnant for the third time, for y'all have knocked her up. I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe. I was not offended, for I knew I had to rise above it all or drown in my own shit. Thank you.
joy and laughter to tears and pain. What I want the world to know is love.
Now,
I say,
what if it was so many?
on your mama. Stay warm.
at home. Turn it on. Full mix.
Life, 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 life
Crazy, stand tall.
Said it'll drive you crazy.
Stand tall.
I'm taking back my power.